You are listening to episode 115 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. No puns intended.
Welcome to episode 115 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is December the 8th, 2013. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my snowed-in brother, James Furlough.
Yes, not to be confused with the NSA guy. I literally am snowed in. we got snow here this last Friday.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's been pretty fun. Driving around, getting crazy. I own a Jeep, which is what everyone's like, can you come? That's just been my response. I own a Jeep. Yes. I'll be there.
Dude, honestly, so I went up to our grandma's cabin this weekend, and there was tons of snow, but I went up in my Honda Civic.
All right.
That was an exciting experience. I ended up having to, this will mean something to you, not something so much to our listeners, so I guess I'll also expand on the idea, but I drove up and I had chains, and they called for chains from Angels Camp, which is like, it never snows in Angels Camp, and there was like a foot of snow if you weren't on the road, and it's like a 40-minute drive, like at normal speed, so I had to like drive from there in chains. Finally got up to Big Trees, which is 7 miles from the cabin, and it just was like, which this is grocery store, and I pulled into the grocery store, I called the cabin, was like, I'm gonna go home because I can't make it to the cabin. It's done. I'm slipping all over the roads, and I'm terrified about getting back to begin with. And they were like, well, but you have breakfast. I was like, yes. I realized that I was gonna bring sourdough pancakes for 10 people, but I literally can't get to the cabin. So
did someone come and pick you up? That would be my answer.
So they were like, park at the grocery store. We'll go pick you up. So yeah, they had a 4-wheel drive car that got me, and I left it there overnight. But it was exciting.
Wow.
Chains worked really well up until it was just to the point where it was like, this is not going to happen.
Grounding out because I'm in a small car. That's funny.
Yeah, it was exciting. It was good. It was a good snowy weekend, and now I'm back in the valley where there's no rain or snow, and I'm happy.
All right, that's fair.
But you know what we're not here to talk about this week?
The weather.
Snow. Yeah. Small talk. This week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology they are developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure he's going to throw your way.
Yeah. I work for HP. I don't have anything good. But I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Yeah.
Oh, how about this one? Speaking of, we're in the Christmas spirit, if you will.
True.
And we went to, to California for Thanksgiving.
Yes.
And we came back, and it was kind of depressing because there was literally nobody on our block, even like past our block, that had Christmas lights on their house.
Oh, bummer.
I know. And I was like, what is with this place? So we went out and we got Christmas lights and we hung them. And in the middle of said snowstorm that we were just referencing, which was probably not the smartest thing in the world, but, we were like, all right, that's what you got to do. So now we're all festive and we're hoping that we set the bar relatively low and in a hope that others can be like, oh yeah, I could do that.
You didn't pull a Christmas Vacation to try to set the tone. You know, I finally watched that while flying back from England. I'd never seen that before.
Really?
Yeah. It's forever.
Pretty funny.
Actually,
I think my favorite line is when Eddie, his brother-in-law, asks him if he's surprised. And he's like, hey, I would be more surprised if I woke up the next morning with my face stapled to the carpet. I'm just like, what?
Yeah.
That sounds horrible.
I love how, like, deadpan everything in that movie is. Like, it's just, he was so funny. He's still a funny dude, Chevy Chase, but just, I love the matter-of-fact nature of everything they do. And his wife's the best part, where she's just like, where it's like the scene where his hand's got the sap all over it and it's sticking to everything. And she just takes the stuff and throws it away. Like, it gets all up in her hair and she still reads. This is just my husband. This is what he does. I don't know. I don't care.
It's
funny.
We just go with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'll say that entire series is pretty funny.
Yeah, it is.
That's classic right there.
Yeah. It's very good. Speaking of Christmas, you're going to have to tell me what you want for Christmas, since it's, like, coming up and stuff.
I want an iPad Air, 64 gigabyte, white, Wi-Fi only. I mean, let's not get ridiculous.
Yes.
yeah, I should figure that out.
Yeah. My Christmas list so far is MacBook Air for, you know, mobile purposes.
Of course.
Yep.
All right.
Xbox One, PlayStation 4. Actually, if I want to be one of the cool kids, I got to get an Xbox 4. But anyway, so if you want to follow us throughout the week, we are active on the internet. We post pictures of snow and cutting down trees and concerts that we go to and people that we meet. It's tons of fun. And if you want to get in on that, I have a Twitter account. My Twitter account handle is at Matthew D. Furlow, all one word, all lowercase. Or you can go on to the Instagram. I'm next Wigan 4, and I have very few selfies. Mostly it's, well, I guess, is it considered a selfie if it's like you and friends that you're like, I don't think so, right? That's just a...
I don't think so. I think by definition. Selfie.
Yeah, exactly, because it's like... all of you Z's.
All y'all. I think it's fine.
Cool. I do have those, though. I try to minimize the number of selfies that I take. I want to hide how vain I actually am.
Fair enough. I am at James Furlow, and also jamesfurlow.com.
Cool. Okay,
here's an interesting thing. Since we're, you know, last week I gave the tip about the, you know, you put the period before the @ to make sure that all your followers will see it, not just people who are following both of you. Remember that? Amazing tip.
I do.
Here's another one that I was reading that I thought was interesting. It has turned out that when you're texting someone, if you put a period at the end of your sentence, people perceive you as angry.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a.
Which I'm in trouble because I always use proper punctuation.
Yeah, me too. I was playing a game.
Not always, but you know.
I was playing a game last night, and it was one of those games where like somebody comes up with a category, everybody writes down a response to it, to hopefully something funny, and then one person reads them all off, and then each person has to guess who said what, and you get points by guessing right.
Okay. Yeah. I know the game.
Yes, and so somebody, one of the big jokes at the end of the night was, like, it was always really obvious which one was mine, because there was always proper punctuation and everything. I put all the right prayers and comments. Like, I guess that's something good to be known by, because it's not exactly so, especially during high school, it wasn't like I was the king of English. Quite the opposite, actually. So, I'm all right with that having become, like, a new thing for me.
Makes sense.
Yeah,
or what that just means is that we are, because I wasn't great at English either, it just means that we are oblivious to our audiences and don't actually change our writing style to match the situation.
Yeah.
Just saying.
That takes what made me feel cool and like somebody who's become competent and turned me into somebody who feels incompetent. Thank you for that. I appreciate it.
No problem, man. That's
now,
all I'm here for.
Now I'm going to stress out about that. Yeah, seriously. Cool. You know what? It's funny. Actually, the reason why I use proper, because I tended to write, like everybody else would write like 2-3 word responses, and I would write longer responses because I wanted it to, like, you know, I was saying something that I thought was funnier and it took more words, but I would put the punctuation in there so that they would get all the All the right pauses and everything, so that they would deliver it appropriately when they read it. And that was good because it, you know, they did and it was funny. But yeah, that now I'm going to stress out about whether or not I should be adding periods.
So.
Am I right or are they right? Anyways, let's talk, you know what? All this shop talk about English and whatnot. Actually, one last real quick question. Are you going to see the Desolation of Smog this weekend?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Okay, good. We just, as homework to our audience, we suggest you read The Hobbit or go to the movies this weekend. Just, we'll try not to ruin it too much, but, you know.
Yeah, I really want to see it in IMAX 3D. But yeah. I just don't think it'll happen because I'm going with friends.
Oh, yeah.
And there are a bunch of sophomore boys, and so I doubt that they'll be like, let's drive down to Eugene and go watch it. I just don't see that happening.
Spend twice as much for the movie. Yeah, I'm probably going to see three movies this weekend because I'm like falling behind.
Whoa.
Yeah, I'm going to see Catching Fire because I haven't seen that
which
yet.
Which is actually really good. I was
that's what everyone says.
Pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I'm going to see Frozen.
Which I also hear is really good.
I've heard that too, and I didn't realize it's a John Lasseter film.
Yeah.
And it's his first one as the head of the Disney 3D studio, so that's...
Shocker!
Yeah, I know. Oh, it turned out good? Weird. You know, it's funny. Do you know what Steve Jobs, like, recommendation to him, his big piece of advice to John Lasseter when he first, the first film that he made? Jobs, all he said was... make it great.
Good advice, Steve. Thank you.
Thanks. You know, but it's weird. Somehow coming from Steve Jobs, I'm sure that had way more impact than it, from anybody else.
All right. It's like in Hunger Games where they ask him for a piece of advice and he's just like, don't die.
Exactly.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I like that, yeah. How are we going to win this game? By scoring more points than the other guy. What?
There we go. I was waiting for you. Oh. That's the one you always fall back on. We want to score an aggregate more points than the other team while minimizing their total points throughout the match. If we do that, we will be successful.
Yeah. Which, by the way, go Niners beating the Seahawks. That was awesome.
Oh, yeah. Can't wait to watch the highlights of that.
Yeah, exactly. Because we don't watch things live anymore. It was exciting getting updates on my phone.
Yeah.
Let's talk tech, dude.
Last week, it was kind of a last minute entry, right?
Yeah. You all of a sudden Sunday morning, you threw in an article that we didn't. You know, usually we like plan these things like days in advance, hours in advance, sometimes whatever. But it was like a last minute thing. Neither one of us had done much research about it because it was like a crazy weekend. Well, it was Saturday morning because the report, the 60 Minutes thing was Friday night. And then we did our show Saturday morning. So, like, you threw the article about the Amazon drones doing delivery stuff. We wanted to be first. We wanted to be on top of it. We wanted our audience to be the most informed and best. And so we were excited because this is a cool new technology. And turns out we're all really got swindled a bit.
Really?
And in a really obvious way, once it got pointed out to me. So this is the thing. It's a week before Black Friday when this thing comes out. I mean, it is the middle of the shopping season. Cyber Monday, whatever it's worth, is coming up. It's a big shopping thing. And maybe 60 Minutes thought, hey, you know what would be cool is if we did a shopping-related story right before the big shopping season. It just so happens, though, that they picked Amazon, the biggest retailer in America, to do this really, very exciting report. So that alone, just the timing of the whole thing is sort of like, that was really convenient for Amazon. A giant, commercial about how cool Amazon is, right before the kickoff of, the giant shopping season. And, one of the biggest complaints that, or one of the biggest struggles to online shopping is the idea that, like, you don't have to wait for things to get delivered. You know, do you get 2-day delivery? Is it 7-day delivery? It's delivery.
Yeah, is it worth the extra $6 to get it 3 days sooner?
Exactly. And it's like, you know, Christmas is coming up. There's a deadline, blah, 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 blah. And here they come up with a story about
how... that I actually think it is... Yeah, right. I understand.
And here's the story about how they're going to deliver everything you order 30 minutes from when you order it. They're going to get rid of it. They're basically going to make it so that Target doesn't need to exist.
Walmart, I just want to, just for the record, I would like to go out there that a few weeks ago, SimCity offered an expansion pack, which is called Cities of Tomorrow. Inside that expansion pack are drones that actually deliver goods back and forth between retailers and customers.
Well, you know, it's
just
funny.
I just want to put it out there that SimCity is awesome.
Yeah, it's that just as a free advertising for SimCity.
Yeah, you're welcome, EA.
So that was like the big thing. And then also it's like, you know, Amazon's pretty good at marketing. They don't get much credit for it, but like they're pretty good at controlling their image and kind of, you know, controlling the narrative of what their company is. And this was kind of an interesting, and they're notoriously tight-lipped and secretive. They don't normally go spouting off about some cool new thing until it happens. So this is very out of the ordinary for them because they're talking about something that, you know, is kind of a ways down.
This is more of a Google thing, whereas they normally pull a page out of the Apple playbook.
Right, exactly. And especially considering the fact that the FAA was like, yeah, you know, this could take as long as like to 2026. Like, honestly, this is not necessarily a this decade thing. I've actually read a lot about that back and forth, and basically they've like there are proposals for how this could be managed in a way that would work really, really well and would make it possible for, you know, vast amount of delivery drones, whether it's pizza or Amazon products or Target. And they talk about how the airspace would be, you'd have different elevations for different speeds and different, and different like stuff. Your course would be over existing roadways and stuff. So everything would be, you know, all of your FAA regulated air traffic would be within a certain confines. Like it's not impossible to see this working.
What you're saying is that Amazon took a group of, you know, 20 smart engineers and said, think this through. What would it take?
Yeah, well, and it's funny. That's a proposal that wasn't even an Amazon proposal. That's just the community, because drones are taking off. No pun intended.
Ha ha! Love it. You know, I'll laugh anyways.
Thank you. Usually, when I intend a pun, I just say no pun intended. That way, I don't. That way, I point out the joke without, you know.
Yeah. I gotcha. Yeah, you're like, did you get that?
Yeah, exactly. It was a joke. You should laugh. Am I right?
Yeah.
No, I'm saying. So the Amazon, yeah. So it's funny. This actually spurred a couple of articles about the idea that all of Google's, like the Google cars, the Google, the balloon stuff. Those aren't about Google actually creating new technology or changing the world. Those are massive marketing campaigns and try to distract you from what they're doing. So they're
maybe
working on these
cynic
cool.
Of the world.
I know. It's funny. I wonder with the Google car ones.
That's an expensive way to do the advertising campaign. If I could just point that out.
Yeah, it's an incredibly, you know, impressive waste of resources. And not to mention the fact that, like, I realize that. There's something, I don't know, I feel like you've got to be really, really imaginative to appreciate what's going on with the automated cars if you never drive on the freeways with them. I feel like nobody in the valley, nobody in the Silicon Valley criticizes the automated car things, because you're like, they're on the road with you. Like, these things are driving themselves right there, like on a regular basis. It's not weird. It's not, you know, and you sit there. So when Elon Musk says in 3 years, I want the Tesla to be able to do that. You're like, well, yeah, we're already doing that. All you're doing is taking their technology and putting it in your car. Like,
yeah, all right.
So, you know, it's a luxury car anyways. People are already paying tons of money. It's not like this is, this isn't a ridiculous proposal at all. You know, and so I wonder with, like, you know, and how Google monetizes that is a big question. But, you know, I think as far as they're concerned, it's sort of like what Java originally was. We don't care how we monetize it. We're trying to advance the science and figure that once it finally gets there, we'll be the smartest ones out there. So however it gets monetized, we'll be the only ones with the right answers because we're the best.
And then, you know, some other company will come along and take all our patents, and we'll be okay with that.
Exactly, because that should be legal.
Yeah.
yeah, I know. There's a certain irony in all of this, but it's like, but the Java project's a great example of it. It's like, why did Oracle try to design the, you know, the platformless, you know, computer language? You know, this isn't unheard of for companies to do this sort of thing.
Yeah.
But all of this comes back around to the fact that Amazon clearly was just like, shop on Amazon for Christmas because we're really cool. And 60 Minutes was like, okay, we'll tell everybody that for you. And they got a 14-minute commercial on 60 Minutes, which nobody but old people watch 60 Minutes anyways, which might be their most important demographic for Amazon because, let's face it, we already shop on Amazon. it was an interesting thing. I mean, like, you know, we talked about it. Everybody talked about it for, like, the first half of last week. It was, like, the biggest story. The morning radio show I listened to, they joked about it for 2 days. every other thing was just like, it'll never work. You know, drones, like, getting shot out of the sky and crashing into other people. You know, them, like, you know, drones coming down and killing your cat when it tries to attack it. It was pretty rough. But for days, all they talked about was how cool Amazon is, you know, effectively. And you're like, oh, man, that was brilliant. You know, and the best part about this is, unlike Google's driverless cars, which cost an unbelievable amount of money, this whole drone program thing was probably a legitimate R&D exercise that wasn't really that expensive. And then they talked about it, and, you know, and they're sitting there going, yeah, technology's there. All we have to do is get the regulations. And, well, that, you
figure
know,
some other things out, and we're ready to go.
Exactly. Yeah.
That reminds me of that Onion speech.
Yeah, the TED Talk.
Look, there's two steps to it. Step one, come up with the idea. Step two, make it. I've already come up with the idea, so we're 50% of the way there. Now you just have to go make it happen.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, I, you know, just good, you know, good on you, Amazon. That was awesome. Nice
all
job.
All right, all right.
But I'm not – it did damper my – and it's funny. I mean, like, the obvious – to me, you know, drone deliveries is going to be radicalized when – trains and trucks and planes do all of that, because those are the people with the capital to make the investment to make driverless car trucks that are safer and better, you know, and that is going to be a big deal because they can go further, they can go longer, and it'll make sense to make that capital investment. But, you know, yeah, you know, individual drone deliveries and that one's a little bit further off.
So I didn't realize that you had that story on there. Otherwise, I would have linked to another article that was talking about that UPS is also looking into it. To which they were like, you would think, as the largest package deliverer in the world, yeah, of course, they're messing around with drones as well to try to figure it out. And, you know, they're thinking about what the next step is. So, you know, it's all that to say, like, yeah, Amazon may not be doing it, and it may have been just a PR stunt that they're, you know, in the sense that, yeah, they're looking into it. They're not anywhere close to doing it, but hey, why not? You know, let's see what happens and let's mix it up and have a good 2013.
Yeah.
And but at the very least, you know, now UPS is like, all right, yeah, we were looking into it. We're going to be a little more serious about it now.
Yeah.
And, you know, so competition's a good thing, which is why we love it and why we're here. And so I do think there does exist a possibility, and I'm with you. I actually think we would see UPS or FedEx before Amazon. Just because they're like, this is what we do.
When you talk about one truck delivering, you know, 100 packages from one carrier to the other, you know, and it drives all night long without, you know, having to worry about the people, you know, that makes way more sense as from a capital investment sort of thing.
I'm thinking like with UPS, unlike Amazon, they have a distribution plant near my city. right? And they've got a bunch of trucks that are there. And I could see where you've got it on the big trucks and the planes. You take it to the big hubs. The trucks drive it down to the city hubs. And that's where they have a fleet of drones. And they're just like, boom, take them out. And they do that, you know, it's that last 10% of the trip. And it's the kind of thing where it's like, yeah, they're sending them out that night or, you know, early that morning, whatever. And then it's the trucks just focus on the bigger packages.
Yeah.
I could see that totally. And that would make a ton of sense for those guys. And it would be pretty cool, actually. And plus, they got the trucks on the ground so that if a drone does have a problem, one of the trucks just swing by and picks it up on the way and, you know, actually delivers the package appropriately. You know, something like that. Whereas, like, Amazon, they don't have that kind of infrastructure to, you know, to solve problems on the fly. You know, and I could see where, yeah, you've got a bunch of packages in your truck, but you've also got some spare drones that you just, you know, you do a, I'm thinking like an infrared cone thing, right? You get the code off the one, take it on the other, and you see the guy go, okay, fly, go deliver it. You know, what I mean? I could see something, they take it back to the hub, that goes, you know, whatever. I think it would be a lot more feasible for someone like UPS to do it. So I read that and was like, okay, yeah, that's actually pretty cool. That's exciting. I could see that. And, you know, and then Amazon, yeah, they're doing it. It's still an Amazon box flying through the air. It's just maybe not them.
Yeah.
But anyways, I didn't link to that, so that was all just for free.
Yes.
Also, let's see here. I know what I want to talk about. Yahoo! I think they're trying to get ahead of the curve. You know how you know, Google does their end of the year zeitgeist, you know, what are the searches and trends and stuff like that?
Yeah.
So Yahoo came out with theirs. And so I think they're like, all right, we're going to try to get ahead of everyone doing it. And which is cool. They can do it. So they did a bunch of them. The first one was the top searches on Yahoo this year. Care to guess what the number one is?
Google.com.
No.
Miley Cyrus.
Yes, it is. Did you cheat? Oh, do you see it?
No, I don't.
All right, good. Don't cheat. Yeah, she was number one, actually. Then they had a bunch of other famous peoples like Kim Kardashian, Kate Upton,
okay,
Selena Gomez, Amanda Bynes.
Yeah, she's the one who went, like, crazy this year. Like, legitimately, like, you know, has a problem. Like, her brain doesn't...
Like, went crazy.
Not like Miley Cyrus went crazy. Yeah, no. Yeah, no. Like, not like... And not like Miley Cyrus crazy, where it's kind of like, am I going off the deep end? Am I dangerous now? No, Amanda Bynes actually, like...
Oh, I know her. She...
It's kind of sad.
Wait, is she the one that was on...
Nickelodeon? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I remember. She was a little... Anyways, Justin Bieber and Jody Arias was on it.
Who's Jody Arias?
Dude, I don't know. The only ones... So, non-famous...
I just Google it.
Yeah, let's see here. Which is exactly what I'm going to do, actually, because I go straight to my search bar. She is a person. Ooh, she's threatened to kill a prosecutor. Anyways, she's a person. Non-people, the iPhone 5 was at number 9. Obamacare was at number 6. And Minecraft was at number 4.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wait, where was Obamacare?
Number 6.
The Affordable Care Act.
It had Obamacare in parentheses, Affordable Care Act.
I wonder if that's because they put the two together and they just said, well, that's funny.
If their algorithm's smart enough, that would be something where Google would be like, we know you're talking about the exact same thing. So
right, yeah.
We'll show you the exact same results.
Yeah, because if somebody, I'm sure if somebody puts in Kim K, they count it as Kim Kardashian. And if,
yeah.
Miley,
maybe.
And
all the misspellings are probably all grouped together.
Yeah, probably. I wonder, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They also have on here Tumblr information because, you know, they own them now. Yeah. So the top 10 most viral blogs on Tumblr in 2013. Okay?
Okay.
It's fun. Number one, reasons my son is crying.
Oh my gosh, that is one of the greatest Tumblr blogs. That's so funny.
There you go. There you go. This charming Charlie. Hot dog legs. Oh man. You can tell it's a different demographic. Things fitting perfectly into other things. I kind of want to look at all of these.
I gotta say, I'm definitely on my way over.
The worst room. Ooh, this one's weird. Brides throwing cats. I don't know.
Weird.
Yeah.
Okay, Yahoo, what the heck is wrong with you? Why would you not... Oh, this isn't a Yahoo article, but I was like, none of them are links.
I know.
Not a single one that's awful.
They're bad. Emotional art gallery. exploding actresses. Yachts... what is it? Yacht cats. I can just imagine. And then BuzzFeed articles without the GIFs. Oh, okay, I like that. Then they have their top questions, like who wins The Bachelor? What is twerking? When is Thanksgiving? That's a great question.
What is twerking?
Why only six jurors in Zimmerman trial? Great question. How to take a screenshot? You know, I got to know that. Then they talk about news stories, search athletes. Surprisingly, Tim Tebow was the number one search athlete in 2013.
Tim Tebow. That is surprising.
Yeah. And then Tiger Woods, who recently messed up a putt to not win his thing, was number two.
Yeah. Because of number four's fault.
Lindsey Vonn, yes.
Yeah. It's his new squeeze.
Mm. So there you go. So you can clearly see... you know, they're highly entertainment focused, I think is one of the takeaways from that. But you know, always fun,
culture.
Always entertaining. I want to check out some of those Tumblr blogs.
Yeah, seriously.
Which you can tell that's clearly they're going for us in that demographic, but that's okay.
Yeah, it's true.
Good job, Yahoo.
Nice.
It'll be interesting to compare to, you know, Google and such. Google always tries to take the high road on that kind of stuff, you know? Here's what, you know, the state of the country or the world, and, you know, it's more like, yeah, I don't know how to describe it, but it's...
I try to make it seem like it's a much bigger, more lofty deal. Like,
part of it is, you know, they call it the zeitgeist, and it's like, you know, this is... Which is really like, here's what culture is thinking about and focusing on and where it's heading. And, you know, it just has more scholarly feel.
I was going to say, I think part of the difference is that it's like, this is the Yahoo top 10, right? Versus Google's zeitgeist, where it's like one is, you know, and zeitgeist is literally defined as the spirit of the day, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, whereas Yahoo's top 10, which, I mean, they're essentially both just as Google's top 10 versus Yahoo's. But Yahoo is like, this is what people searched on Yahoo. And whereas Google's like, this is what people are thinking about in general. they take a much more prominent, and it's funny.
Well, they would take the time to try to summarize it all and be like, okay, what does it all mean? And telling us.
Yeah, and what's funny is, like, I sit here and I go, it's interesting to see what people are Yahooing, because it tells you what kind of people are on Yahoo.
Oh,
but with Google, I'm actually interested in seeing what people were thinking about this year, which is different. You know, and it may not be fair, but that's kind of where I'm at, you know.
Well, and is that because you know that, you know, Google clearly captures a majority of the users and therefore you can extrapolate that? Or is it because of the attitude Google takes? Like, for example, could Yahoo make that kind of, you know, if they approach it the same way, would you be like, yeah, here's what people are thinking? Or would you be like, dude, it's Yahoo?
I think Google is allowed to approach it that way in a serious manner because they have the vast number of of people, but that being said, they're the only ones that can get away with it because they're the winners. But at the same time, they make it seem like through their method of delivering the information, they make it seem like this is really what we are all talking about. As opposed to, like, you know, this is, you're like 60% of searches. There's 40% are, you know, are something else. And an awful lot of that is Bing. Like, you know, it's you know, you're not the only thought out there. What I think is interesting about Yahoo, though, is I'm actually willing to bet that Google has, that the Google zeitgeist is less centered and less, you know, obviously Miley Cyrus and twerking are going to be up there, but I'm willing to bet that Google Zeitgeist has fewer celebrities, fewer stories about you know, pop culture and entertainment, and more stories about Obama and the Affordable Care Act and, you know, Benghazi,
yeah,
or whatever.
I can see that as pretty high up, yeah.
And the reason why that is not necessarily, I think what it has to do with is the nature of Yahoo News versus Google search. You know, whereas most of the people that I know about who go to, you know, go on Yahoo News or go to Yahoo, they go to Yahoo News, and I think from there they search something. And so it's like, you know, and so, you know, obviously, if, like, you know, you want to pick up and you know, a big part of Yahoo News is entertainment. It's a great source for, you know, online entertainment news. So I think that there's a correlation there of just what people expect when they're going to Yahoo, what they're trying to get out of Yahoo. Mm-hmm. Whereas Google, you know, Google's just kind of the catch-all of, you know, if you're going to use both search engines, if you're not just biased because you only use one, chances are I'm going to go to Yahoo for entertainment, whereas Google is just going to be, I'm going to use Google for everything. But I think, you know, the people who do use both use Google for your kind of catch-all, like,
okay,
they search everything there.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So speaking of trying to understand the trends and what people are thinking, Apple recently made a purchase to try to get that, or why did they?
Yeah, so
what are they doing?
So this is a big question. That is the question. So Apple bought Topsy.
I don't remember. You'll have to refresh me on who they are, or is that what you're about to do?
It is. Topsy was a Twitter analytic tool. Basically, they are one of like six companies in the world that has access to what they call the fire hose.
Ooh, yeah.
Which is the unfiltered Twitter stream, and in real time. So just an unbelievable amount of data coming out of the Twitter servers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're basically, what they did was they analyzed it. They had a bunch of tools they used to try to figure out what was going on in the world. There's a few of them. They're not particularly unique from anybody's reading of what they do, other than they do it as well as anybody else. So it seems as though Apple had to buy or wanted to buy one of them, and this is the one that they got with the best price. One of the theories here is that Apple...
I'm kind of surprised it could just ask Twitter, hey, can we have access to the fire hose?
Well, or, you know, I think...
Or buy it or whatever that works.
I was going to say, I think, it's funny. I don't think that's why they bought Topsy, other than they knew they wanted access to the fire hose. They knew that they were going to have to pay for it somehow. And this came with a bunch of analytic tools already built in, you know, into the purchase. I think what it was is this was just sort of a really easy way to fast track something that they knew they were going to do. You know, it basically just allowed them to, you know, drop some serious change and get the floor running. So but the big question is, in, you know, Apple in their notoriously, you know, secretive ways, they didn't tell anybody why they bought it. They just bought it. And so there are theories, one of the best articles that I read about, you know, about why they bought Topsy, he posited a couple of different theories. One is using social data to improve services, particularly Siri. So this is an interesting idea because it's like Siri already gives you access, like, through ESPN, through Fandango, through this, through that. They give you a tremendous amount of access, you know, Wikipedia, stuff like that. They give you information on the fly. Now all of a sudden, Siri is plugged into Twitter in a really serious way. You know, before it was always you could post to Twitter. Now, theoretically, you could ask Twitter, hey, what's popular on Twitter? Or ask Siri, what's popular on Twitter? And she can tell you based on this analytics, which is kind of a cool idea. I'll be honest. That's, you know, there's something to be said about being able to deliver that information in a way that, you know, and that's something that Google can't do with its, you know, its Google stuff,
right?
You know, where its assistant, you know, where you could ask, you know, what's going on Google Plus, and it would say nothing really. ouch.
For the bros, that's what's happening.
Yeah. But whereas this is, you know, that'd be powerful. And theoretically, you could also tie it, you know, you could use it to improve kind of overall knowledge of what's going on, and maybe Twitter, you know, maybe integrate it with better responses and stuff. But, you know, that, the big theory there was that it'll give a new, better Siri stuff. Enhancing content discovery. So this is a big deal, because one of the things that these analytic tools are used for is basically saying, asking the question, what's popular? What are people talking about? So if there's an app or something that's been taking off, Apple will pick up on that long before anybody else will. And, you know, curating the App Store has been a long and difficult process. Like, nobody does it well. And, you know, Facebook thought they could do it well, they don't do it well. Google thought they could do it well with their stores, they don't do it well. Apple, like, it's almost as though they don't even try, they do it so poorly. but they do try, and that's the weird part, is they try really hard, and it's just not great. And part of the
reason some poor dude's job to do that, who's like our age, and he's just like, oh, this is hard. He knows what he wants to do, and they won't let him for some reason.
Yeah, what drives me nuts is that it's like where app discovery is terrible, music discovery is great. Like, you know, they're self-made, they're like, they're curated stations that you get through the radio is awesome. Like, they are hands down better than any station Pandora has ever, like, automated Pandora station generated for me. You know, and so far, like, I use radio, iTunes radio most of the time now. Like, occasionally I'll go back to Pandora. But it's like, I went through, built a couple of stations, they work great. I use a couple of Apple's, like, they're like, they'll take three artists and, like, artists like these, and they're really good and just discovering a lot of music. And the reason for it, I'm sure, is because Apple has gone through by hand and created these stations that are, you know, they don't have an automated tool that does it. They have people that do it. They do it the hard way, but they have talented people with good taste in music designing these stations. And for whatever reason, they've never done that with apps, you know, people picking out good apps. They try to do it in a fairer way. I think that has something to do with it, but I don't know. Anyways, this is an idea that hopefully you can actually see an app trending and then move its location in the App Store and the App Store, and give it better placement or worse placement or whatever.
I see also, that. I see the Siri thing is definitely there.
Yeah,
if we do this, it was worth the purchase. If we can get other stuff out of it, cool. But you know, we're not gonna push.
Right. So this is also, obviously, this would also go with that same theory applied to music. Now you know what music, what movies, whatever is trending. You know, you can do that with the App Store. And since selling, you know, stuff is such a big part of it, it makes sense to just kind of have real-time access to that data. They probably were already, like, getting data from Topsy or a company like Topsy, and now they're just, it's baked in. You know, also real-time, like, marketing and relationship. Is Apple doing well? What are people saying about Apple? What are people, you know, stuff, questions like that. Just more data for, you know, for your back pocket. And then the last one that everybody said is...
Hey, you know, Apple, if you need someone to help you looking at all of that data, I might know someone.
Big data miners, let us know.
I might know someone who can do that.
And then iAds is another big one where it's like, you know, that's something that can be definitely improved and enhanced by knowing what people are talking about and having access to, quote-unquote, the zeitgeist. And I guess that's what everybody has decided, kind of the general rumor mills has kind of settled on the idea that what they bought was the ability to look at the zeitgeist. And how could you apply that to their different services? And this is the different ways. And the real answer is they probably were already doing that. They were just paying Topsy an unbelievable amount of money to do it, and now they own Topsy. You know,
my observation has been with Apple. It's like, you know, we come up with all these fanciful things that they could do, and it's like, dude, just pick the most obvious one, and just the one, and that's what they're going to do, and that's all they're going to do. They're going to do it really well, and we'll all be like, man, that's amazing how well that works. They should be doing these seven other things too, but they won't. They'll just do that one really, really well. So my guess, I'm going to go on the record of saying it, is they're going to do the Siri thing, and they're going to do a better integration with Twitter, and they're going to do it really well, and they're going to be like, whoa, Siri is amazing. And then we're going to wish that they brought it into the App Store and other stuff, and it'll just never happen. And that's okay. I mean, that's just – that's why I've been my observation.
Yeah. It's okay. I'll give it to you. That's pretty valid. I mean – I I go back to, I doubt that Apple was going blind on this stuff to begin with. You know, I don't think that these are going to be everything I've read about the app, you know, app discovery, this and that. I have a feeling that that's already being done.
Like, oh, I look at Twitter and go, there's other things that you can do first before you do that, that will give you a better bang for your buck.
Yeah.
And they just, you know, they need to do it, and they're not, but that's just me.
It's true.
Huh. Okay. All right. So who knows? We may never find out. Or we'll see it in iOS. Are we up to 8 now? Is that the next one coming up?
That is the next one.
Dang.
So speaking of Forge is on fire about all this stuff. What? Sorry. No. Never mind. Do you want to know what the acquisitions up to? Because they've been going crazy with acquisitions. Do you want the full list of what their acquisitions have been this year, Apple?
Yeah, lay it on me.
Okay. So category number one, maps. In March, they got Wi-Fi Slam. It's a mapping company that figured out how to track a user's location indoors. Okay. In July, Hotspot.com, Raiders of the New York System.
Riders.
New York City.
But that would be pretty sweet if there were Raiders.
That would be pretty cool. Of the New York City subway system. This one, it helps a commuter plot travel around NYC and other cities via public transit. I didn't know that. And that one's public transit in maps is, well, it doesn't exist. What you do is you click on the public transit and it tells you download Google Maps, which is pretty funny. also in July, Locationary, the Canadian startup, has been described as Wikipedia for locations. In August, Embark. It's another app that helps commuters navigate mass transit. So this one was pretty obvious. We don't have any mass transit systems. We're going to buy companies and try to, you know, fast track that. Number two, the semiconductors. This is the one I think is fun. In August, they did Passive Semiconductor, a startup built chip to help wireless devices use less power and battery life. Nobody really understands why. Yeah. In November, PrimeSense, the dudes that brought us the Kinect, the first generation. In November, AlgoTrim. The Swedish company doesn't make chips, but its software helps devices run reams of data more efficiently by using less memory with its compression technology. So this is exactly what this is one of the big features that was brought to Mavericks that they talked about once and then never talked about again. But essentially what it does is it does real-time data compression on RAM. So it takes your 16 gigs of RAM, and now you can fit 16 gigs of RAM like in 12 gigs of RAM, which opens up an extra 4 gigs for you. Nice. So it's just really supercharged how efficient RAM is. Pretty cool. So I think they're just going further on that. In December, they bought Topsy. They also bought, in August, they bought Match TV. The company offers proprietary online video recommendations.
Okay.
You know, and that one, like, spurred, you know, more and more Apple TV stuff. October, Q. The company has software that turns data into an iPhone or data in an iPhone or iPad. Yeah, whoa. You would download a car into a personal assistant.
Clearly for Siri.
Yeah. So it sounds like they're doing some big, you know, obviously hardware updates, Siri updates, and maps updates. That's kind of the trend. You're like, okay, it's Apple. it's funny. When you actually put all the different pieces of their acquisitions together, what, you know, what might be one or two, you know, kind of, oh, well, you know, where it's all these other crazy ideas that it could be, you know, it just becomes one of those things where all of a sudden Topsy really does fit in very well with the idea of it's an improvement to Siri. What are they trying to improve? What are they working on? And, you know, you start to build this overall narrative.
Funny, they've, you know, they put Q as in an other. I look at it and go, no, it's data. I don't know. And what this also tells you is that their focus is on the iPhone and iPad.
Yeah.
It's not on the iMac line, and it doesn't appear to be anything to do with the television right now, other than they're still messing around with it and going, okay, let's work on online video recommendations, which quite frankly could be for the iTunes store. You know, it's
probably
not necessarily
is,
for an Apple TV specifically. So you look at all that and go, yeah, that's where their focus is, which is where their money's at. That's where the growth is. That's where you should be investing.
Yep. It's true. That's Lover Dodd. So yeah, good times. Good times.
Another company out there making it happen, maybe making something weird happen, is LG. They came out with their G Flex.
Yeah, what is that?
It is, I don't know if it's the first ever. It's one of the first. We'll say that. It offers a curved body that contours to your face.
Nice.
It's flexible and has self-healing panels on the back of it.
Self-healing panels on the back.
Yeah. So apparently it's got some sort of, they call it a substrate, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Thing where if you scratch it, the molecules will actually, depending on how warm it is, depends on how fast it'll do it, but they'll eventually like come back together again and cover up your scratch altogether. So, like, obviously, if it's a deep scratch, you know, and you get below that top surface, like, yeah, you're scratched, you're done. But they're like, yeah, if you were to slide it on your table or have your keys go up against it, they're like, it would just heal itself naturally over time. And I guess they took, like, in a demo, they took like a like one of those brushes that you use to clean a grill, and they just like whoosh, 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 went over it, and they literally watched it in a 5-minute time period, like pretty much go away.
Whoa, that's
cool. Yeah, exactly. They're like, whoa, that's awesome. And then they were like, the screen, which is getting, it's like a curve, so, you know, fits against your face, so it's bent, but it could flatten out if you like sat on it or did something, it doesn't break, no big deal.
That's important. That's really important.
Yeah, which I'm like, yeah, I can see that is. And I think they said it could take up to like 80 pounds of pressure or 100 pounds or, you know, something where, okay, you couldn't, 88 pounds of pressure and it won't crack.
And it'll travel through time.
That would be really nice if it did. So it's running Android, in case you haven't guessed that already.
What? It's not true. Yeah. It's not running Windows 8?
I know. Well, you know, it's LG, so
yeah.
They're very much in the Android camp. So they've got, you know, of course, their own little flavors of UI on top of it, which there's some things that look cool. It's got like this knock to lock and unlock thing, so you kind of knock on it, and I'm sure maybe the password setup, so like you got to do a certain rhythm, you know, dun, 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 or something.
Dun, dun.
Which is pretty much what everybody would try. Except I would leave off like the last little dut just to A, drive everybody nuts, and B, no one would ever unlock it, because who would think? no, I actually don't know how that would work. The other cool thing is that like at any time on the phone, if you take your two fingers in the middle and pinch them apart, it'll open up your video player, and you can select the video and just start watching. So you're like, all right, it's made to watch videos, apparently. It's got some cool side-by-side app type multitasking. That's the word I want. Multitasking stuff. It looks cool. But the big thing, obviously, is the hardware. It's a curved screen. It's flexible. And then the back kind of self-heals. And
well, it's funny. Just having them say it fits the contour of your face, for some reason, takes it out of the realm of, well, that's stupid, too. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Whereas, you know, Samsung's, you know, Galaxy Round of, you know, a month ago or whatever, where they're like, it's round. So what does it do? Round things. Like, well, why. I mean, I don't know if I'd go crazy over that. I'm not going to go buy a phone because it's round. But at least it sounds like, at least they came up with a reason for it to be round.
Yeah.
You know, and
now this thing, if I remember correctly, is not yet available in the United States.
Of course not.
Oh, and they don't even have like plans to make it available. I mean, they want to, it just, they don't, you know what I mean? They're not like, it'll be on this carrier starting in March. They haven't even gotten that far yet. But it is available, or will be available, where is it? It's like in Korea or something like that.
Crazy Korea.
But the price is like $1,000.
That's expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
It's outside of my price range.
Yeah, so from what everyone was saying, they were like, if you could buy it in the U.S., like, it's not quite ready for prime time yet, but it's an awesome concept device, and it's one that they're actually making and selling, and so they get a lot of feedback, and chances are this is the first of many to come.
Nice.
So, pretty cool. LG, pushing the envelope. It won't translate into sales, unfortunately, for you guys, so you're really just helping Samsung with their R&D. But, you know.
Yeah.
It's the way it is.
It is what it is. It's cool. You know, honestly, it will help LG though, because they're pushing they make OLED screens, and they make, you know, I think for them, they'd be fine if nobody ever bought one of these phones, but Samsung bought, you know, a bazillion OLED screens for them, because, you know, rounded screens happen. You know, LG's so big, and I like Panasonic, and, you know,
yeah.
A phone would be awesome, but components are even better.
Mm.
Yeah. So, speaking of things that aren't available in America, well, I guess technically this is available in America, but big news this week, China Mobile finally inked a deal with Apple Inc. of Cupertino, and they're going to sell iPhones in China on China Mobile, which is a big deal because it is the biggest wireless carrier in the world with 700 million active
users.
That's
a lot.
That's right. There are twice as many active users on this single carrier as there are living human beings in America.
You know, it's funny. I was going to say, like, how big is that? You know, because I'm thinking of the other carriers, and I think that just put it in for me.
Yeah. So
they're going to sell a ridiculous number of phones.
Oh, it's funny, and they're like, and one of the things that everybody's always said about the iPhone is that they don't sell unless you have a carrier subsidy, just in general. That's not generally true, but whatever. And turns out China Mobile, they're doing a subsidy, so if you sign up for a 2-year contract, you'll get a subsidy. Now, they don't think that'll be a huge draw for a lot of people, because that's just
all they need is 1%.
Yeah. And they're like, you could double the number of iPhones you sell every year by taking like 5% of the sales of China Mobile. I mean, like, you don't have to do barely anything to their entire sales fleet to just do an insane volume of business of iPhones. Just insane volume. And which means that when the iPhone 6 or whatever it's going to be called comes out, and the first day sales are, they beat records again, it'll be thanks exclusively to China Mobile, to think that they are able to do that.
Yeah, it's one of those where it's like when they come out with the next iPhone, and, you know, assuming they're able to launch China, you know, concurrently, it's kind of like, if it doesn't show a 25% increase over last year, like, you guys did something wrong.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of where it needs to be at, you know, which most people won't report it that way, but that's fine. But
right. And it's just
Wow. Cool for them.
Big deal. Finally, it's happening. So now there's only, you know, now that they're selling, it's the top, I just read the top nine, the top nine best-selling models of phones in Japan are all iPhones, which is an impressive, you know, they finally
Wait,
got.
How is that?
So each of the color of iPhone, or so they, it's not, the colors aren't different, but it's iPhone 16, 32, 64, and then iPhone see the same divisions, and then I guess the iPhone 4S.
I guess if we're going to break out Android devices that way, we should do it, same thing with Apple.
Yeah. So, yeah, so that's how they get those numbers. But it's just, like, it's crazy. I mean, it's just they're selling, like, gangbusters
in Japan.
In Japan, and they're going to be doing some huge business in China. And classic Apple, they don't need to be the biggest player in the market. They just need to, have their little piece of the puzzle, and they're going to keep their profit margins because China Mobile is going to have a really serious, it's a subsidy that is on par with the American subsidy. It's within 10% of the price for an unlocked phone, on contract versus, whatever, versus the phone with the subsidy is, same price as well. So, which is a pretty aggressive pricing structure, especially for a lot of countries. They don't have as aggressive as America when it comes to, good deals on the subsidy. So it's a big deal, real big deal.
Yeah, it's huge. And
if you're a stockholder in Apple, that was great news. Definitely helped the company out. That wasn't one of those like kind of bad news, good news, where like announcements usually are, where stock jumps right before and then plummets afterwards. Now, this is just one of those. Just a good pre-Christmas little gift. End of December is when the phones will go on sale, so just in time for Christmas, which is not a big deal because they don't celebrate Christmas much in China. that's where we're at.
All right. And
you know what? And because we're on the Apple kick right now, I'll just
do it.
Keep going. That's all I care about this week, evidently. So iBeacons was something that we talked about.
This week, huh?
Wow. I appreciate that.
No problem, man. I'm here for you. See, the problem is that I took a nap in the middle of the day, and so I'm just like, I'm feisty. What can I say?
Yeah. You're awake. You're alert. So I just got a private message letting me know that my room is a mess from one of our listeners, which, thanks for pointing it out. But
yeah, I guess it is. What's that red thing in the back? What's that?
It was supposed to be a paddle for your fraternity stuff, but it never really got finished, so it's just a block of wood at this point. But yeah, my room actually, now that I'm looking at it, it's dude, ever since I got back from England, my room has been just an explosion.
That's what I gotta do, what I do, the close up, that way you can't actually see the pile of laundry sitting behind me.
It's perfect. I like to share I like to share myself with,
with our audience. You like to be real. If I turn my screen just right, you can actually see the nativity scene over my shoulder here.
Nice.
That my wife made. It's pretty awesome. It's actually from her grandmother, and so we've got it. And then you might see the little colorful thing. Let's see if I can do this. Oh boy. I gotta go this way. How do I do this? Oh, there we go. I got this. That little thing right there, that is Fluffy. It's a penguin that my wife, who was like in kindergarten, is up there watching over the baby Jesus for us.
Nice.
Because that's what penguins named Fluffy do.
Hey, man. Away in a manger. what are you going to say?
I don't know.
Totally got distracted. Oh, okay.
iBeacon.
Speaking of the iPhones.
Your room was messy, but we're talking about iPhone, iBeacon. Go.
Right, so iBeacons. It's this new thing that came out, and it seems pretty cool because it basically allows you to track what's going on.
Right.
Location-based stuff. So, the idea was you'd put you'd put an iBeacon on the you'd put a little device on a. Let's say you're at a conference room, you're a big conference, right? And you want to let people know when they're really close to your stand, you can send them a push notification and say, hey, this is our thing, and these are the different deals we have. And so it's all, it's designed to give you way better location-based, services. And we've been talking about where do you get these iBeacon things from? How does it work? And they're kind of expensive, or not necessarily too expensive, but there's a price to it involved. And how long, and a lot of things that people are looking at is get the price down, get the battery life super long, get them out there. And then what can you use them for? Blah, 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 blah. And I always thought I kept thinking it'd be cool to go and get one. If I could get one for like $50, I don't know what I would do with it. Put it in my room so you know when you're in my room, something like that. But I thought it would be cool, and yes. I was, yeah, and you know, but I just I couldn't.
No. What you'd do is you'd bring it to like somehow figure out how to hook it up to like a battery pack, and so when you go out to a bar or something, you have that with you, and you're just sending people messages, getting yourself in trouble.
Oh, that's actually a really good idea. Well, welcome. Yeah. So yeah, that's actually a cool idea. I was thinking you could put it in your car. Well, see, this is the thing. So Apple, yeah. So Apple,
don't hit me.
Yeah, exactly. So
I'm
Apple,
a lawyer.
Yeah. So Apple, you know, realized that this was going to be a problem. You know, because it's like which comes first, chicken and egg. It's a cool idea. People have iPhones, and you know, it's a useful tool. But
yeah,
you know,
they got the egg. Now they just need the chicken.
Right, exactly, and they slipped one by us because they basically, I guess, I know I'm not quite sure how long this has been known, how long they've been like telling everybody this, but evidently it just like popped onto people's radar. And because yesterday Apple began a small press push on its new iBeacons technology, and basically what they said was, by the way, you can use your phones and iPads as iBeacons. You can configure them so that they're that. So
really?
Yeah. Yeah. So
all right, where's
that
the
whole phone? I don't yeah, I got to yes, there are separate devices like Estimo's beacons that can use Bluetooth low energy protocols to act as a beacon, and Apple is using separate specialized iBeacon devices that look like small silver rectangulars tucked under shelves in some stores.
Okay.
But some of the iBeacons deployed in Apple stores are not specialized hardware at all. They're just regular iPads and iPhones that have been configured as iBeacons. And that capability extends to any Apple device with Bluetooth low energy and the latest major version of the iOS.
Okay.
Let that sink in for a minute. You start to realize the forward-thinking strategy Apple has been implementing over the course of the last few years. Holy cow, that's right. They're everywhere. They're already everywhere. So when you're in that conference, you don't need to go out and buy a $100 iBeacon. It's sitting in your pocket. Or
all right,
you buy
it. Right, I'm ready. How do I?
I don't know, okay? I literally read this article a half an hour before the show started, and I've been like, how do I do this? Because guess what? I'm going to go to a bar, and I'm going to have iBeacons in my bar. Some 90% of Armor Actives. Capable. I mean, that is. They have the right hardware running iOS. That number could be. I don't know. I got to figure out how to do this. Let me Google it. How to use iPhone as.
Yeah, forget about the show. Let's figure this out.
Yeah, this is an important part of this. People love listening to you Google search stuff. It's like, it's what they listen to the show for.
We have research that shows that.
Yeah.
Highly engaging content.
I feel
like, what if I just search for it? Would it? Probably not, huh? It's not that smart.
iOS. Run iPhone as iBeacons in the background. Is it possible to run iOS device as a Bluetooth LE peripheral iBeacon?
Yes.
And have it advertise in the background? I have been able to get it to advertise in the foreground with the code below, and you can see it from another device.
Great. Tell me how.
Standard core Bluetooth advertising can broadcast while the app is in the background, but not if they were started with CL Beacon. Oh, so you got to write an app for it.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. Which kind of makes sense. That kind of makes sense. But, yeah.
So the API is available on all phones, it's just in their general SDK.
Yeah, but I want to make this app. Oh, man.
All right. Good to know. So it's something like, for example, Square, cash register dudes, you know, could be like, oh, this is a really good idea. Let's implement it into our app and give shop store keepers an opportunity to let people know when they're near them.
Yeah, or if you're like Facebook and you want to know where your friends are, or if you're, you know, Foursquare and you want to be able to bring people together, stuff like that, you know. just general. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities here. This is
cool. Can see that for Find Your Friends or Find My Phone or something like that.
This is cool. I like this. I'm all up in this business. I certainly want to find out about iBeacons.
There you go. Now you have a project to learn how to code on.
I got all sorts of projects to work on.
Yeah, I bet.
This is another one on the list. So very cool, very cool. And it's what's exciting about this is, you know, it's, oh, geez, I love it when Apple does this. Like, sort of like, oh, yeah, by the way, everybody can do it now. You know, and they, you know, they it's backwards compatible with everything that runs iOS 7 can run this. So, you know, for, you know, all of a sudden, if you're selling, like, boots, you know, there's definitely a place for discrete iBeacon type stuff, and I probably what'll happen, I imagine, is that you'll have a device that has a Bluetooth low LE, low energy, in it, and it will be able to connect to iPhone and Android phones, and so it'll work. You know, it will work as a, you know, an iBeacon, Android beacon thing, you know, and they'll be designed specifically to be able to connect to multiple devices so that you can, you know, basically anybody with a smartphone can connect to it. Whereas this, you know, is sort of a way to just fast track that to allow a tremendous number of people to experiment with it, to figure out what it means culturally. And then all of a sudden the hardware, you know, having a discrete piece of hardware will make more sense because you'll understand what to do with it and how to do it. So instead of buying an extra phone to work as your iBeacon, you know, if you need more than one, you go out and buy, you know, pieces of hardware. But if you're just trying to figure out if it makes sense to use it at all, you've already got the phone in your pocket, try it out, see if it works for you. So, pretty cool, very exciting, and, I don't know.
That's cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Love it when they do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, me too.
Awesome. I'm gonna go, and then...
All right, see you later.
And then I'll let you go.
Okay.
All right, a couple. I saw this thing, and I have a bunch of... Yeah, anyways, I saw this thing. It's pretty cool, actually. I looked at it and went, oh, that's brilliant, and it totally makes sense. It's called Smart Charge. Essentially, it's an LED light bulb with a battery on the back of it. So let's say the power goes out in your house. Doesn't matter. You still got 4 hours of light.
Whoa.
Yeah, right? I mean, that's, like, totally awesome. And somehow, and I mean, like, I know enough about electricity to electrocute myself.
Right.
You know.
Amount.
Yeah, exactly. I can get it to work. I just don't always come away unscathed. And so these guys, Smart Charge, they're doing a new Kickstarter project. Pretty cool. They're trying to get $50,000, and they've got $15,000, and I'm sure after this story, with 42 days remaining, they'll get there. But somehow they figured out where it's like, even if, how do I say this? Even if the power's out, you can use the light switch to turn it on and off. And it's somehow, I know exactly, I see you throwing your face, because I'm like, I don't understand electricity enough for this to work. But somehow they're able to recognize, I guess they can see, like, okay, the circuit's completed, so we got continuity, therefore, you know, even though there's no power, they meant for it to be on. Maybe that's how it works. All right, see, I know enough. I just got to think it through. So the light actually turns on and off as you would expect, but it's also smart enough to realize, oh, it turned on the light. There's continuity. There's just no power, so you probably still want it on, so we'll turn it on for you. And because it's LED, you know, the battery doesn't have to be huge, and it's LED, so it doesn't use a lot of electricity just under normal circumstances. It'll last 25 years. Here's the other cool part about this. I don't understand how they did this. They're $35, which, for the price of an LED, like, that's actually super competitive.
Yeah.
You know, an LED is maybe, you know, $15, $20, which is like, for $35, if I just got, you know, you get one or two to put in your house for, you know, so you can get your flashlight and figure out what's going on. I look at this and dude, this is a no-brainer for, like, mom and dad whose power goes out 5 times a year.
Right.
And, you know, let them put it into one of the things. They said that one of the things that they can't do right now is they can't do multiple lights in a row. So, like, you know how in the bathroom, like, you might have multiple lights going across the mirror?
Yeah.
Like, you can't have all of them. You can just do one. They haven't figured out how to have multiple of them be able to tell what's going on with it. But
Weird.
Pretty cool. I was like, dude, that's cool. That's awesome. I hope they get funded. I'll have to see what their, let's see here, what are their, it's probably $35, then if you do like a 70 or something, you get multiple lights or a packet or something. Let's see here. Yeah, they've got 191 backers. They're at 21,000. Now, the founder, some of these videos, you're like, I get it. You're the founder. But come on, guys. You're trying to raise $50,000. Do a better video.
Yeah.
You know, come on.
Did you ever see that Kickstarter project where for a better Kickstarter video? Like, they made a really bad video where they talked about they're raising money to make a better Kickstarter video. Yeah.
I love it. That's hilarious. I love it. Yeah, so you can do $5. You put your name on the website. If you do 35, guess what? You get one. Ooh, you do 55, you get an early bird special. They'll give you two. Man, this might actually it won't happen in time for Christmas, but I was like, man, that'd be awesome. Again, I look at it as like, this is like, it's just one of those where it's like, man, for $35, if the power ever goes out, you know, it's just you've got it in one of your light sockets and you're good to go.
See, you know what my problem is? I want everything and I want it now. I want it to have multiple light colors and connect to my iPhone, and I want it to have a battery backup. Why not? Why can't I have that? That's all is that too much to ask? Is it too much to ask? Yes, actually, that is too much to ask right now.
Apparently. I think this is the kind of thing where I really hope companies like GE and...
And I want it to be an iBeacon, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I hope that other light bulb companies are looking at this going, oh, wow, that was really smart of them. And it is super... You know, putting a battery in there totally makes sense. And maybe you don't need it for 4 hours. Maybe it's just like, dude, give me 15 minutes. Give me an hour. Give me something... You know, just long enough so I can go get my flashlight or go get my lantern or something, you know, for the long haul of it. But, you know, just put a mini battery inside every single one. And you know, if you can figure out how to string them all together and you've got all LEDs in your house and all of a sudden your power goes out, but you still got lights everywhere, like, all right, cool. You know, and maybe they're smart enough because they're LEDs. Why not you take them down to half power and extend the life out of them? Because you're like, okay, yeah, you can't see everything, but you're not tripping all over yourself. I saw that and was like, that's a brilliant idea. And I think with LEDs, it's highly possible, and I liked it.
Yeah, that is very cool. I like it too. And there's no practical reason to say that's not something that'll happen. I think light bulbs in the future are going to be crazy. It's just going to be crazy. It's going to be like, you know, they're just going to be super high tech, and it'll make sense to have super high tech stuff. I mean, it's just one of those things where, you know, right now they're expensive and they're difficult to get in there, but at some point the price point's going to come down enough. They're going to have all these different features, and your light bulbs will just be smart. And, you know, chances are they'll have some sort of iBeacon technology in them, you know, you say it half jokingly, but it's like where anybody can walk into your house and immediately be able to turn on and off lights, like it were a light switch. You'll have access to it, you know.
Or you know, you just walk into the room and they're on, you walk out, they turn off. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they'll be smart, and there's no reason to think that they won't keep getting cheaper, because basically what they're doing is they're leveraging all sorts of different technologies that are out there that are being used with your phones, with your, you know, with LEDs. It's not the cutting edge. All they're doing is they're using, you know, everywhere from a decades old to 18 month old technology, putting it all together in the best, you know, formation at the cheapest prices, and they're able to get, you know, competitive. And if you got a battery that lasts for 25 years, suddenly, you know, a capital investment on you know, on a bulb that was going to last 25 years and it does all these cool things makes sense. And so, you know, and, you know, saves energy, blah, 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 does everything that it does, you know, they, you know, and like you said, what's cool about this is that, you know, Panasonic is going to take note of this and go, oh yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. We can do that. We can make our bulbs that much more competitive. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's another step in down the course of, you know, building better light bulbs, and you know, I can't wait till we start reinventing the wheel too.
Yeah, no, that would be cool. I love this. If you can, you know, I have Kickstarter, you can pledge different levels. You know, if you pledge $10,000 or more, the opening line, "You are special," in all caps. Like, yeah, I hope to shout. You spent $10,000 on a bulb.
Yeah.
And you get 4, by the way.
Woohoo.
Plus, they'll fly you out to have dinner to say thank you for giving us so much money. You get to go watch the manufacturing process, and you're invited to a one-day brainstorming session for their next product.
Okay. Yay.
So, like, which is really just a pitch for them to try to get more money from you, but they're going to make it seem like it was your idea, and you should really get in on the ground floor of it. But, no, I'm kidding. They probably wouldn't, but... sorry. It's a cool idea. I like
it. It's a cool idea.
And, yeah, like you said, I hope others follow suit.
For sure. Cool. Do I want to go next, or do you want to go next?
Yeah, you can go next. Something about a rocket science or something?
Yeah. So, have you ever heard of the Vasmir?
Oh, yeah. Never.
Yeah. So this is kind of a cool story. Basically, 23, that's not the right number. 43, is that the right number?
I don't know.
39. Did I come up with 23? That's weird. So basically what happened was, don't worry about it.
Okay.
Basically what happened was, there's this, we want to go to Mars, yeah? And actually, so this is what's interesting. So there's this dilemma, and
we don't want to. We're going to Mars.
We're going to Mars.
It's a matter of when now.
And who's going to die to do it?
Yeah.
But so one of the big dilemmas that we've always had with space travel is, you know, how to do it, how to travel.
one of the biggest problems we've had is doing it. All right. That is a big problem.
And what I've always found kind of fascinating about about space travel is effectively, like, we come up with the most elegant and, like, beautiful technology and just some of the most impressive feats of engineering that you could possibly, I mean, like, it's inconceivable some of the things that we do and all of this, just, like, delicate, incredibly intricate, impressive, incredibly well crafted, just the, like, you know, when we talk about state of the art, some of the stuff that we did with the space shuttle programs or with satellites, it's just, it's mind bending that we are able to craft these unbelievably delicate and beautiful pieces of technology, and then we blow them up into space with giant, like, fireballs, and it's like, and we it's this wonderful, like
dichotomy.
Yeah, an interface of this incredibly sophisticated and delicate and you know, and handcrafted stuff versus just the carnal energy of a rocket. And that, you know, and so there's so many levels to appreciate space travel on. But one of the problems is that, you know, this whole rocket system is really inefficient. Rocket fuel is really expensive.
Yep.
And, you know, it like is incredibly explosive and incredibly high energy, but it's the only way we know how to get out of the planet. And once we're up out of the planet, it's really the only way we know how to get from anywhere to anywhere. Mm-hmm. And it's the same technology that we've been using for decades and decades and decades. It's, nothing's changed in it. It worked well, so we stick with it, or worked well enough, so we stick with it. Mm-hmm. And we keep trying to find all these different solutions. And obviously, there are proposed solutions like the space elevator or solar sails. But one of the biggest ones has been the idea of a plasma rocket. Essentially, what happens is, in order to...
Wait. I thought fire was a type of plasma. So isn't a rocket, like the traditional kind you and I know and love, a plasma rocket?
Not really.
Oh, all right.
But kind of. So basically, the principle of this whole thing is that... I'm trying to make sure that I'm... Let me think through this so I make sure I explain this right. So effectively
feisty.
What happens
remember
is,
that.
What?
Feisty, just remember that.
Yeah. So effectively what happens is
when you have in order to move forward, a force and an opposing force, and they need to, like, you know, push on each other. So you can't jump if you have nothing to jump against. The rocket can't go unless it has something to push against. And effectively what happens is you create a high-pressure area, and you get one small place to escape through a hole. And so these particles get ejected out, and that's your exhaust. And that ejected stuff is what drives the rocket forward. So it, you know, at high velocity, that fire is effectively incredible. Is hot gas, and hot gas lets off black body radiation, which is light, and other, you know, other sources of stuff of on the electromagnetic spectrum. And but it's just hot gas. A plasma is a different state of gas. It's certain types of gas, and it's incredibly hot gas. And it has properties that are not entirely like just hot gas, and specifically electromagnetic properties, where gas isn't really affected by magnetism and electricity, like, you know, fire exhaust. Plasmas are, and that's a really, really, really important distinction, because effectively what happens is with traditional rockets, you create an incredibly hot gas, an incredibly high pressure, and you push it out of the hole, and the nozzle kind of directs it, and that's where you go. Whereas with a plasma, what you can do is you can get a stable gas, like argon, get it really hot, and then you can use electromagnetism to move it, and so you can turn magnets on to eject it, and all of a sudden the rocket goes in the other direction. So instead of combustion and pressure being what moves the gas that's rocketing you forward, it's now electromagnets. And what's such a big deal about is that you can get a ton of argon, and actually other types of gas. Argon's the obvious one early on, which is why I was using an example. But it's not the only thing you can make a plasma out of, which is important. So basically what happens is, what you can do is you make a solar cell array. You collect a bunch of electricity that way, and then you use that energy to drive the plasmas, to heat the plasmas up, and then to drive them to create your force that allows you to, you know, rocket all over space.
Okay,
but this is a big deal this is a good idea, because what it does is it limits the amount of, like, fossil fuel that you need. You're talking about a really prevalent molecule or atoms and molecules,
but you're still limited to how much argon gas or whatever you have around. Yes. Right,
exactly. Yeah, or to whatever you're creating your plasma from, you are limited by how much you have. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, that is a part of the problem. But basically with the VASIMR. It stands for Variable Specific Impulse Magnetoplasma Rocket, which I want a magnetoplasma rocket, which makes use of argon gas, one of the most stable gases known to man, and a renewable source of energy found in space, radio waves in the form of light, which is really bad writing, if you ask me, from science writing. The main difference between this rocket is being able to use mostly renewable energy in the propulsion. So that's that's cool. And so effectively what they're saying is that they've gotten really good at building these plasma rockets with these new, especially this VASIMR. They've gotten much better at being able to use energy in an efficient way, because originally, if you were going to do this, you'd have to generate energy, and they would talk about, like, maybe we can put, like, a nuclear reactor on it and collect energy that way.
That was my thought.
Yeah, you can put this on there, you can put that on there. And it presented all these other issues. So instead of just dealing with the fact that you need a lot of argon, you'd also need some sort of a really powerful energetic source. Well, now they're saying, now we're just dealing with argon. Only need argon. So all of the space that you wanted to use for that nuclear reactor, you don't need anymore. We'll just put the argon there. It's a cool idea, because what they really think it's going to do is it's going to really, really cheapen space travel, specifically when you're in space.
So you're probably not going to get enough thrust to be able to get out of the atmosphere. But you're probably going to get enough gas where all of a sudden it makes sense to do more, you know, instead of just like going around the globe on the, because right now, like space travel for us, like we basically get things into orbit and then just keep them in orbit. That's the extent of space travel. Well, they're saying with this, because the energy consumption's so low, it'll make sense to actually do much more dynamic movement. So they're talking about, like, you know, debris. Space debris is kind of a huge problem. Yeah. So we can send, you know, a rocket or an automated thing out there that we can actually travel around and collect up space debris.
That's cool.
But this is also a big deal because the rocket will allow for a mission to Mars with a travel period of just 39 days.
Whoa.
Which is almost six times faster than current methods. And the reason for it is because although you can't, and they don't talk about acceleration rates and overall thrust rates, but one of the traditionally plasma rockets have slower thrust rates than combustion rockets. But the impulse, which is the duration of your thrust, is way, 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 way longer. So where you give a really good kick, you fire up as hard as you can, as long as you can, and you get really good acceleration for a very short period of time with a combustion rocket, and then you just sail all the way to Mars.
Yeah.
One of these things, you turn on the rocket and you just keep going. And so your acceleration
gets faster and faster and faster.
Exactly. And so you pick up speed continually, and so by the time you get to like your top, you can basically accelerate the whole way there, then turn around and decelerate the whole way down. And so they're talking about how this will really, really, really shorten the trip to Mars. And what's cool is you probably put enough argon for a return trip, which, you know, as an astronaut going and visiting Mars, that's kind of a big deal.
So you keep the big ship floating around, and maybe you have like another like
orbiter,
maybe not like lunar lander thing, but something that could escape their
atmosphere. Something that does have, you know, jet rocket fuel on it that can get off of Mars again.
Cool.
And reconnect. Yeah. So, you know, obviously we're not
that's
going to Mars next year, but it is. I know it's terrible. But it's very likely that you'll see something like this, you know, popping up into a satellite in the next couple of years.
Yeah, okay.
That's realistic. And, you know, which is cool. It's very cool. The whole thing is very cool.
That is awesome.
Yeah. Get excited. So, and it also sort of, you know, what's the word I was looking for?
It's the kind of thing where I wish that I would be born like 100 years later from now, because, you know, they'll have figured out some of that stuff and some of that space travel. They'll be like, we're doing it.
Yeah.
You know? And I just, because I feel like that's kind of how long it's going to take some of this stuff to happen.
Yeah.
But cool. That's awesome. I want to bring us back down to Earth.
No pun intended.
And we'll literally start in our homes. How about that?
Nice.
This is interesting. I kind of want to get your feedback on it and just, you know, tell me what you think. There is a company out there called HomeJoy. Okay, and these guys just raised $38 million.
That's a lot of money. That's not kidding around money.
Yeah, they're a startup that makes it easy and relatively affordable, only $20 per hour, to sign up for a home cleaning.
Nice.
$38 million. Which I'm like, I don't understand why.
Yeah.
I feel like that one's been solved already, but, you know, whatever. So they literally are... they were a Y Combinator startup, and they're available in 30 markets. I'm guessing they're available in yours.
Probably
not. Not in mine. And I love how they use the word, like, professional service providers. It, literally, housekeepers. But, you know, it's cool. Let them say what they're going to say. Their whole thing is we clean homes. And now they're starting to look into... You know, they're their mission, I guess, which is always good, is like we're talking about making happier homes. And so part of that is, you know, if your home is clean and you like it, then it's happier. And now they're talking like, all right, what are some other things that we can do? Which here's honestly why I saw this like, oh, interesting. I wish they were in our market, and the reason why I lived near you, or not near you, but you know, in the Bay Area, we're probably not going to do this, but we have joked around about spending some of our fun money when we pay off another student loan, because you've heard my plan. I think I mentioned it on the podcast, but just in case. I'm currently paying off a ton of student loans and debt, and it's super fun. And after each one that gets paid off, we take that lump sum and we do something fun with it. And because we do the snowball method, each time it gets crazier and crazier. Yeah. So, like the very first one that we did, we went to the spa for a day, you know, did that kind of stuff. It was fun. The next one, it happened to coincide with a business trip to Vegas. And so Jesse came out. And we spent the weekend there, and you know, it was fun. For this next one, because we just paid off another one this month, booyah! We're actually headed to Disney World in January. Nice. So you can kind of see where you know, this is slowly getting crazier and crazier. Yeah, and we keep trying to keep it in the experience category, not just buying stuff, which is killing me because I love an iPad. But which I try to argue, no, that's an experience. But one of the – I know, right? one of the things that we talked about doing is I was like, how awesome would it be to have one of the lump sums be – and I mean, and we're talking, you know, I don't know what we're up to, you know, like $1,500 for the next one. Or is like, if we hired like a housekeeper for however long the money runs, you know, goes for, and I'm like, you know, it would be sweet if like, yeah, come clean our house like once a week or something. And I don't know, like the ultimate dream would be like, I want them to do the laundry and wash the dishes and, you know, and then sweep up everywhere and, you know, wash my sheets and all that. Just let me, for at least a little while, let me let go of all of that. Just to see what that's like to have someone help me out. And I'm always like, dude, can you mow my lawn? That'd be sweet. To which I think is a totally different category altogether. But you know what I mean? Something like that, just to be like, oh, that'd be fun to have. It'd be hard to explain to someone like, yeah, we're not doing this long term. We have a lump sum of money and we're just going to, however, you know, and you try to do the math, right? How much is it per visit? Here's how much we have. Okay.
$120, by the way, for my place.
Really?
Yeah. 5.5 hours is what they recommend, and $10 if they're going to supply the cleaning supplies, which, yeah, I'm not getting any cleaning supplies. So,
$120. All right. Which, so for us,
me and my roommate, like, $60.
That's thinking about. You know, so for us, if that were the case, which I don't know, you know, that'd be like 10 visits is kind of how I would do it. And I'd be like, all right, maybe you come once every other week, maybe twice a month.
Yeah.
Maybe that gives me 20 weeks. That's half a year. That'd be cool.
That's cool.
That would be cool. You know, and my biggest problem is I would probably really like it and become adjusted to it. And then, you know, but. So that was, we've goofed off and talked about doing that. And then we're like, all right, quit being lazy. And, but I'm like, no, it lets us think on higher value things. We can work on our relationship or other stuff or, you know, whatever the excuses are that people throw out.
Instead of cleaning, we'll work on our relationship. I like it. I like that.
Yeah. We'll hang out. We'll have fun. I think if we had kids, that might be a little more of a, yeah, that'd be cool to instead of, you know, and the trick is to not just sit around goofing off watching television while they're cleaning. It's to, like, go out and do something, actually spend the time doing other stuff. But anyways, I saw that and was just like, wow.
You got $38 million for that.
$38 million, which one of the things which I think was just kind of a throwaway line here, was this one right here. It says, behind the scenes, the company says it has built a fairly sophisticated technical infrastructure to manage its workforce. And I went, that's $38 million right there. That's what they're paying for. And they figured out how to apply it towards a distributed workforce, and that's what they're investing in. Yep. So literally it's in the last sentence of like the random fourth to last paragraph, and so I was like, all right, these are just a couple smart kids who figured out how to make it happen. They found the need and they got after it. But
yeah,
it's kind of neat. What they really need to do is they need to take it like Airbnb or ride sharing or something like that, where it's like, hey, I'm a neighbor who likes to clean and I've got time. Let me hook up with this service. They'll verify me and, you know, get reviews, and you can invite me to come over to your house and clean your house for you or something.
Yeah.
And that way it's a distributed network and they're just managing all the in-between stuff. I look at that and go, that's the real interesting, you know, company type thing. And the, you know, the trick is you're going to open up your home to semi-strangers. But I could see it where if you're you're only working part-time, you're looking for a gig, and you are good at cleaning, good at casing out places, that could be a good opportunity. but, yeah, anyways, $38 million. Man, we got to come up with an idea.
Yeah.
That's what that says to me. There's someone else did come up with an idea that I liked. And I don't know. For some reason, I'm attracted to this space. And I don't know why, but I am. Like when the magazine came out, that was
in the 1940s.
Yeah, and then again on the iPhone.
Oh.
When Marco Arment, you know, that guy who's like wicked smart, and he just happens to come up with the great ideas. He came up with Instapaper and the magazine, and he was a co-founder of Tumblr. Well, not, he was like an employee, which is a weird thing. But anyways, he's a smart dude.
Yes, he is.
He came out with that, and he was like, you know, all these, we've got the newsstand for Apple and subscriptions, and a bunch of the magazines were just like PDFs, essentially, fancy PDFs of their existing magazines. And he's like, no, I'm going to start from scratch. We're going to do it light. And I'm gonna write good articles, and I'm gonna charge money, and I'm gonna pay my writers really well. And and he ended up selling it to another guy who, you know, he's doing well. They're kind of annoyed now that you can hide the newsstand inside of a folder.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, well, that's the way it works. Sorry, that's your risk when you put all your eggs in Apple's basket. So. You know, deal with it. So that hasn't stopped another company called Offline.
Yeah.
Which is trying their own iOS publication, which they admit, you know, they saw the success of the magazine, and apparently The Loop is another one that's doing pretty well. They're like, dude, we could do this. And so it's a couple guys. Apparently this dude was involved with Apple originally, just like an engineer. And, you know, he went out. But anyways, they come up with this magazine. It's about an hour's worth of content, or 5 articles a month. They said, and they're going for content that is very similar to what you might find in The New Yorker or in the early days of TED, where they're doing something interesting on any topic where, you know, the reward is, oh, I learned something cool from it.
That's a rough description of what TED is by referencing what it was.
Hey, they're the ones who wrote was.
It's not entirely unfair. They were a victim of their own success in some ways. They diluted their message.
Well, yeah. Well, and they tried to counter that by doing TEDx, but you know, it's whatever. It's what it is. Anyways, so the point is, there are these 5 articles that you can read, and one of the cool things that they've done about it is, besides being able to read it offline, is you could be reading it, and then at any time you tap on a sentence, and it will start reading it to you from that sentence. And they've actually hired professional, you know, voice actors to read it out for you, and you know they've indexed it so they know where that spot is on it. And so, like the example this person gave, it was like, yeah, I was at the gym, and I was listening to an article, and then I got done, and I sat down, and I read it for a little bit, and then, it knew where I had stopped listening and brought me back to that. It's very similar to what it sounds like Amazon's, Audible, who's owned by Amazon, you know, what their whole thing does with the Kindle, and with Audible, where you can sync up the two, and which, you know, is magical in a lot of ways. So theirs does it with the magazine. And it's only like 99 cents a month. It's not.
That's almost like content. That's worth a month.
Yeah, and that was, yeah, and that, so they were like, the idea is to get outside of your news reader and just give you some good quality reading that you can do for relatively, you know, not much. And his whole thing is he's going to give 10% of the app revenues to the writers. Yeah. Which I'm like, so if another writer does really well, everyone benefits. All right, that's cool, I guess.
Yeah.
And since there's only five authors, so he gets 50, the other ones, you know, split the other 50%, 10% of the way. And so his goal is to significantly beat the industry norm for spending. So usually the industry averages $50 to $2 per word, and you know they're around 1,000 words, something like that. So you could make you know $500 to $2,000. He's like, my goal is to get it somewhere between like $5,000 and $10,000 per article, and he's like, and by his, you know, and so his whole deal is like he has an incentive to find really good writers and to write really good stories, and then they have an incentive to share it with their followers to, you know, increase the number of subscribers. And, and he's like, it should be awesome. You know, and what he'll get really frustrated is if he's, if he's... Because what's the math on that, just out of curiosity? If you wanted to get up to, let's just say, $1,000 per – okay, I can do this. If you wanted $1,000 per author,
yeah,
right, that means that you've got to be making $10,000, right?
Yes.
Which means – you've got to have your 10,000 subscribers divided by, what is it, the 70 cents that Apple... So he's got to have a little over 14,000 subscribers because he's got to share some of the revenue with Apple, right? Apple gets 30%.
Right.
And then he gets the remaining 70 in order to pay the 1,000, blah, blah, blah. So for every $1,000 that he's able to pay a writer, he's got to have 14,200, so 14,000, we'll call it 300 subscribers. So to hit at least the minimum or the higher level, whatever, which I think that's a very reasonable goal to hit. I mean, I think at 14,000, that sounds like you could do it.
I'll tell you what, I'm downloading the app right now. I'll give it a month.
All right.
You know, at 99 cents, I'll give it a month.
So, and his frustrating part would be if it's, you know, if he does stick around, which, I mean, you can pay me $1,000 to write, but, you know, if it does stick around that $15,000 to $20,000, where it's enough where, yeah, you get some writers, you're just not going to get the top tier guys because they're getting paid $4,000 or $5,000 to spend their time writing for someone else. It's right. If he gets some good ones and it really takes off and he's able to hit like that $10,000 marker, yeah, now, okay, anybody and everybody's going to want to write for him. And as long as he does a great job of doing the editorial and making sure they're quality pieces, that could be a very virtuous cycle.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I read that kind of stuff and I'm like, man, that's an awesome business idea. And it's something where this person built a platform and, you know, his job was to sell it to the first, you know, probably the first 3 months worth of writers that it could work out. And, you know, and then just kind of let it take off on its own from there and let the app sell itself. And I think it's something that, you know, if it's good, people would actually read. I don't know. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I like it too. You know, that question of how you can, you know, the changing medium stuff. I agree with a lot of the people in media that the idea that the blogosphere is not the future of news. But what is the future of news? What does it look like? You know, that's a big question. You know, there's definitely a place in society for really, really high quality journalism. I mean, it's you know, the fifth estate, the fourth branch of the government. I don't actually know why they call it the fifth estate, but you know, it's an important, a competent and free media. You know, oftentimes we talk about the free media as this, you know, incredibly important part of democracy, but a competent and free media is an important part of democracy. An incompetent but free media is as good as a competent but not free media. It's useless. So, you know, and in order to have a competent one, you can't rely on free bloggers. You have to have high paid, high credibility, you know, people, and you have to be able to, you know, and one of the ways to do that is to cut through the slack, to cut through the noise and be able to, you know, focus things down. You know, Reddit's not the future of Reddit, and Twitter are great for breaking news, but they're not the future of highbrow political, economic, and entertainment thought, and you know, somehow, right? Somehow, we need to move into a new. You know, we have to move from that being done in newspapers, and move it to it being done, you know, some other way online, and hopefully, this sort of thing will be that transition. You know, because that's an important thing. It's not the medium is dying. The media is still important. It needs to stick around. And the problem is that the media is dying along with the medium. And so hopefully I want this to work. You know, there's a part of me that's like, there's a part of me that sits there and says, it's like with the magazine. I never read it because I didn't want to pay the money for it. You know, it's boring, you know, or not, it's not boring, but it's like, you know, I don't want to pay money, I can get it for free. But there's a part of me that's like, you know, we as a society, we kind of have to. We have to decide that we're going to pay for this. It has to become a cultural decision to finance.
Like tipping.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, it used to be, you know, they talk about, you know, what's happened with the news media? It used to be, you know, with cable news, news was thought of as like the charity thing that the cable networks did. They didn't do it to make money. They did it because it's important for society, and so the news used to just bleed money. And nowadays, they've contracted news stations. They've, you know, they put on big people. They do the 24-hour news cycle, and part of the reason why it's so, you know, news is so crazy is because, you know, they try to blow everything out of proportion so that they can get ratings, so they can make money, because they're now money making things. Something changed in society, and it was amongst the social elite, the people that have the money, that own the organizations. They decided they wanted to make money from news, and so if it didn't make money, they were going to cut it out. And if they, you know, and in order to make money, they went crazy. You know, and which is true across basically every political stripe, with the exception of like CNBC that, you know, nobody watches because they're not controversial. and so the question that I have for myself, and I hate these kind of questions because I always sit there and be like, I'm just one person. It's like voting. Like, I have a hard time voting. I always vote, but I always feel like this is stupid. I'm one person. And I statistically don't matter. But, you know, as a cultural movement, if I were to make money and I were to read these and I were to talk about them and I were to spread the word and I talked one other person into, you should do this, it's really affordable and it fits into your budget, you know, that's the sort of that, those are the trends that people start to advocate for and make a cultural shift. And so this is one of those ones of how do you make sure that technology doesn't fundamentally undermine society? You know, it's like weapon systems. You know, one of the things that comes with new technology is weapon systems. Regulating and protecting against that is an important part of developing new technology. Well, this is a similar way. We've kind of built this weapon of how to destroy media, and we need to regulate and rebuild it. And I think we can only do that societally, you know, because, you know, things like NPR aren't going to, you know, we're not going to be able to fund with our democracy news and have it be, you know, be the only source of news and good news. You know, you've got to, I don't know. It's interesting. I say all this to say that I think I definitely will give this a month, and I'll probably give it more than that. And if for no other reason, then I want it to be a success because I want this type of thing to be a success.
Yeah, yeah.
And I actually think that part of my time and finances should be, you know, maybe not a big part, but some should be. It'd be like getting the newspaper, you know.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it should be involved in this, not just for entertainment's sake, but because it makes me a better citizen and it makes our nation and our culture and our society better because we're paying for it, you know. Yeah. We're invested in it.
That makes sense. An article semi-related to this was about Medium, which, if you remember, is the platform that's been started by co-founder of Twitter, Evan Williams.
Yeah.
You know, he also was the started Blogger.
Big deal.
Yeah, or whatever the name of the company was before Google bought it, and then he was involved in Twitter, and now he's going in the middle to Medium, which is another blogging / publishing platform. You know, so he's got a different vision of it, right? Where it's not about creating a separate app or creating your own blog stuff. It's one where you can get the information out there, and you know, you say your thoughts, you add your photos, but then it's all kind of on one system. And, you know, and so he's like, the best ideas rise to the top. It's not about who has the most followers anymore or, you know, the biggest name. It's just about, you know, your thoughts.
It's interesting.
On it. Yeah, and so they were saying that they've come out with a bunch of new updates where they've got, whatever, you can put like a bigger picture up at the top and have an overlay text. You can have bigger photos. Anyways, they were saying they're now 1.0 because they've got some pretty cool, you know, they're like, we feel like we finally have a complete product that, you know, is kind of ready to be used by everyone. But, you know, they're like, but we're still at the beginning. So, but it's just a totally different take, right? Where his whole thing, and he's kind of going the opposite story where he's like, you know, way that you were talking about, he's like, no, it should just all be free. It should be out there. It shouldn't matter who writes it, and there shouldn't be any paywalls. It should all just be on one single platform and service.
Right.
It's not about design. It's about the content.
Huh.
Which, like, it's not as fun. But yeah. I could see if you didn't. But here's what I don't understand. It's like if you didn't want to manage a full-on blog and you had more of the say than 140 characters, you join Tumblr.
Right.
And where at least you choose your own design. And you say select and you're done. But even like today with even Blogger or WordPress, I mean, you really don't have to know a lot and it doesn't take a lot of effort. And I guess the only nice part about this, you know, versus say Tumblr or your own blog is, you know, if you write one thing and then you never come back, all right, that's cool, whatever. You know, it's all part of one big stream. So it's not like people be like, dude, when do you do another update?
Right. See, because there's nothing worse than telling somebody, yeah, I wrote a blog. Oh, what's your blog? Oh, I haven't updated in a while, so I'll tell you later. That's just, it's embarrassing for everybody involved. It's honestly the coolest, I'll be totally honest with you since we're at the end of the show. This is the coolest part about this show. The fact that we've actually done it every week for 115 weeks, like, you know, even if no one were listening to us, still make me feel like we were like a legitimate like thing. We did what we said we would do. It's cool.
Yeah, yeah, no, totally. I've had multiple friends where that's the case. They start up a blog and you're like, all right, cool, I'll start following you, and I do. And they get like, I mean, you can tell that they say what was on their mind. And they're like, okay, I'm good, I scratched that itch.
Yeah, you know what you got to do? If you're going to start a blog, I've seen a lot of people do this, and I think it's the best way to start is to start out with some sort of a project where you actually sit there and you plan out the first year of your blogs, right? Because most people aren't very good at using blogs as a journal. I mean, your blog, you know, outside the Rat Race, has been impressive in the fact that you are, have consistently done it, even though you don't have like a, this is what I talk about, and these are my topics that I'm going to talk about every week. You know, if you're not a real writer and you just write for the fun of it, then you've really got to have a project to write for. You know, it's like for me, I would describe myself in that category. I don't write because I enjoy writing. I write because I enjoy telling a story. So as long as I have a story to tell, writing and writing consistently isn't a problem. But if I'm just, you know, I don't sit down and start writing looking for a story. I start writing once I found the story. I think a lot of people they come up with the idea of a story, and then they start writing thinking that they'll find the rest of the story, and they don't. And like you said, that's one of the cool part about this is that it allows you to do that. Cool, I came up with, you know, one thing, one idea, and that's all it was, and which is an interesting idea. I'm sure there'll be some level of success to it. For that reason alone, it'll be really a hit amongst the people, the one-offs.
Well, I know for me, it's like if someone's like, yeah, I'm thinking about starting a blog and I have something to say, I know now it's like, okay, let's be real here. You know, how much do you actually think you have to say? Do you think you could keep this going for a few years? Or, you know, do you just have a thought on a topic that you want to talk about? You know, and if they're like, yeah, you know, whatever, you know, if they're honest about it and, you know, and they say that, you're like, hey, this is probably the platform for you. So you're not going to invest a ton of time setting something up and making it look all whatever and then having it sit there and then be embarrassed about it. You know, if anything, you could still reference it and still talk about it and go, because that's what this was designed for. I had a thought. I put it out there. I'm done. And, you know, and you can respect that. And you don't feel the need to fill it up. And
there's something compelling there. I mean, that to me, as a ongoing thing, and which I guess was his point, right? It's like it's not about the writers. It's about the idea. And, you know, it's not about power users. It's about you know, it's about whatever. There's no momentum of your past works. It's the momentum of this individual idea, which is great for people that don't have a past works and aren't going to develop one, you know?
Yeah.
And on the flip side, if you're the sort of person that, you know, if you come up with something great and garners a lot of attention, you know, whereas in a lot of other mediums, you know, if you are a consistent blogger, what you're looking for is that one big hit piece so that all of a sudden you get 1,000 user, you know, followers and they start talking and you start to grow, you know? Whereas this is a little, it's different in that it's, you know, it'll be interesting. I wonder if we'll be referencing ideas from Medium in, you know, a year or two.
I know I've read a few articles from there, and I think there might have been one or two on our show that we've had from there. I know the company Lyft, which they have an app that helps you, you know, do daily things that uplift your life, and you set goals and you just track them and stuff like that. They recently wrote they were like, it's an open document to this idea that we have about weight loss and, you know, and using Lyft in order to achieve your weight loss goals. And they did it on Medium and were like, yeah, submit your comments and your feedback and we'll be editing and updating and as we go along. They also have a Tumblr blog, so I'm not 100% sure why they chose to go with Medium over Tumblr. But, you know, but I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. They're using it. So, just an interesting tool. You know, just that publishing space is definitely moving and shaking. I felt like last year was, and even the beginning parts of this year, you know, was massive, mega doom and gloom, where it's like they're all shutting down and no writers are going to get paid and therefore no real stories are going to get written. And even then the blogosphere is going to dry up because they're all leeching off of real reporting. And, you know, it's the end of everything as we know it. And, you know, which is always fun to say and report about, and, you know, we definitely had our fun with that. But it's like, no, the reality is there's super creative and innovative people out there who do notice a gap and see what's missing and are like, all right, we'll try to figure out a way to fill it. And
yeah.
And they are. And I think that it's cool.
It's cool. That's cool. Okay.
I would be totally okay, just for the record. I'd be totally okay to own a publishing platform. That's really cool. I would be all right with that. I mean, I guess technically I do, outside the rat race.
Yeah.
This doesn't make any money, and I'm the only publisher on it. But hey, I've got a platform.
We've got this.
There's no written text, but you know, it's publishing, I guess.
Close enough.
It counts.
It's written text read aloud without any of the writing.
I guess for me, the the I've made it stage would come when I can afford to hire other people to also create content for me. I think that's when it's – I'm not really a platform in that regard.
Right.
It's me.
Right.
Which is okay. I'm okay with that. But it would be cool to get to that point, which means somehow I've found a topic that people find valuable enough to – read consistently and click on ads or subscribe to or something, and other people are willing to contribute to. But anyways, that's a dream of mine, which is probably why I'm attracted to those type of articles. I'm like, oh man, how do I make that work for me?
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of dreams, I don't have a good segue here. I just want to mention this really quick because I thought it was crazy interesting, and I think it'll become a bigger and bigger deal over the week, so I want to bring it to your attention now. PS4 outsold Xbox One for day one sales 2-1. They sold like 2 million. Xbox sold 1 million. In the UK, PS4 is destroying the Xbox One. And like 66% of sales are PS4 had 66% more sales than the Xbox One. They sold like 250,000 units in the UK. So they're selling like hotcakes. And definitely, wow. I think long term, there's not necessarily the clear winner, but out the gate, PS4 is not doing what the PS3 did.
Momentum supports.
It is important. It's not the end all be all, because in the end, the PS4 through PS3 sold a ton. And they couldn't have had worse momentum.
But they continue to have this perception that Xbox was better.
Yeah. But I don't know why, man. I've never been able to get behind the PlayStation brand.
Yeah, because they were a competitor to Nintendo.
I know. But why is it that all my other friends don't have a hard time with this, and I do?
I don't know. You're nostalgic like that. I don't know. Here's the question. Do you think, just because, seeing the show and why not, do you think Nintendo will come out with another TV console?
An interesting question.
I mean, clearly they're going to come out with more handhelds. That's a successful business for them. They should.
I wonder if you'll see something move in the direction of a hybrid platform where, you know, like where the Wii U is kind of a handheld, kind of a TV. I wonder if you'll see something, a full-blown, you buy a handheld that projects onto the TV. I wonder if computation graphics get good enough where it just becomes...
It actually goes the other way around, where the handheld's the gaming device and the console is just... Is
an Apple TV, effectively.
It's a controller for the TV, essentially.
Yeah.
Interesting. I could see that.
I don't know, because that's where
they... You buy a DS, and then you buy this $100 dongle that allows you to play your DS on the big screen. All right. I buy that.
It's funny. I mean, that's a market where they've really owned it. I mean, obviously the iPhone has eaten into that a lot. But you know, I can't play Pokemon on my iPhone, so guess what I bought? And I can't play Link on this, or Link I call it. I can't play Zelda on my iPhone, so guess what I bought? I don't know. It's an interesting question. I think it depends a lot on how the Wii U does over the next 2-3 years, you know?
Well, yeah. And just how Nintendo does financially.
Yeah. It's not great. Brawl hasn't come out yet. I think you'll see something crazy happen when I think Brawl will move a lot of Wii U's, and I have a lot of friends. I have a surprising number of friends that have bought a Wii U or will buy a Wii U. I mean, they've stated that they want to on top of their Xbox One, PlayStation 4, just because they like the games, they like the community, they like the X, Y, and Z of it. And
the price point's just right, huh?
Right. Exactly.
Okay. So, all right. Fair enough.
You know, we'll see.
So they might come out with another console, but that might be it. All right, fair enough.
I think, honestly, once Miyamoto quits / dies, I think that will be the end of Nintendo. Because he's the magic behind so many of their games, and their in-house games, their first-party games are what sell their systems, and that's all there is to it. People buy Wii's to play Brawl, Mario, Zelda, and Pokemon. Or, DS. You know, so it's like there's nothing particularly special about the hardware, and because of that, you sit there and go, and there's like one genius behind all of their amazing games. You know, what are you supposed to do?
Never let him retire.
Pretty much. Work him till he dies. And then pretend like he didn't once he does.
We'll see. Really. Cool. All right. Good to know. Well, everybody, thank you for joining us. My name is James Furlow, and my dry and warm brother is Matthew Furlow. And so we will talk next time. It's all good, man.
I just got that.
What?
So you've never watched Breaking Bad, but there's a lawyer in this show called Saul Goodman, and that's what his name is. Saul Goodman. Yeah, that's funny. Never mind.
There you go. Spoiler, jeez. Okay, we'll do much worse next weekend.
Yeah, seriously. They kill the dragon.
Oh my gosh, don't tell me these things.
Have you read it?
He uses his ring. Actually, I tried to, and I think I got like halfway through one of the books or something. I don't know.
No, this is The Hobbit. This isn't The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, no, The Hobbit, which I wasn't super thick, right? It's not super thick.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like the short, enjoyable one of the five. Or four.
Yeah, well, I made it as far as him finding the ring and was like, this is boring, and I stopped reading it.
That's funny. Never mind, I won't.
I was in, like, ninth grade, too, by the way. It's not like I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was.
That's it.
Here's the worst part. I think if I tried to read it today, I'd probably say the exact same thing. Now, put it on an audiobook, I'll go through The Hobbit and the whole Lord of the Rings trilogy, no problem. I'll do it in a month.
But, you just can't read.
Man, you're going to make me try to read actual letters?
Yeah.
Not going to happen.